Well, I was mentioning, have you ever met somebody that you just, rubbed you the wrong way? You just had a funny feeling about them? In a moment, Georgina Cannon back with us on Coast to Coast. She was with me several years ago as we talked about her book, Return Again, How to Find Meaning in Your Past Lives and Your Interlives. This time, we're going to talk about the Third Circle Protocol, and she'll explain what that means when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Dr. Georgina Cannon, award-winning consulting clinical hypnotist, relationship coach, author, lecturer at the University of Toronto, recognized as the public face of hypnosis in Canada, and a very respected member of the mainstream health community as well. We were talking about the Third Circle Protocol. Yep, she will explain it. Georgina, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to speak to you again.
Looking forward to this. What have you been up to over the past couple of years?
Oh, writing books, teaching hypnosis, teaching past life regression, teaching at the university, traveling, just generally life, having fun.
Perfect. How easy is it to hypnotize somebody anyway?
It depends on whether they want to be hypnotized or not. Most of the time it's pretty easy because we live in trance anyway. You know, a good 80% of what we do every day, as you know, is automatic. So which foot we put down when we get out of bed, first, how we hold our coffee cup, how we walk. It's all automatic, and anything that's automatic comes from the subconscious mind, which means we're doing it without thinking. We're doing it without thinking. We're in trance. So it's very easy.
Your new work is called the Third Circle Protocol. Now, what does that mean? What's that title mean?
Well, it's the third circle is the contract, the unspoken contract that we have in all relationships. So there's you, there's myself, and then there's that relationship we have, which is the third circle. And it comes with expectations. And 90% of the time, we don't talk about those expectations, which is why we always get let down, which is why we feel disappointed or things don't work out the way they're meant to. So whether it's a relationship between you and I, George, or whether it's a relationship at the supermarket with the cashier, or a loved one, or a parent, or a teenage daughter, or your dentist, there's always an unspoken expectation, a relationship. And unless we understand how that's made and what it's made of, our values, our expectations, our priorities, what we're prepared to give, what we need from it, then we let down, we feel unfulfilled. And this book is literally holds the hand of the readers and allows them to work their way through making healthy, successful, long-lasting relationships, first with yourself, because that's the most important thing.
A lot of people, when they meet somebody for the very first time, get impressions, and sometimes they don't get very positive impressions. You know, they just, the person rubs them the wrong way. Can you fix that, or is that really a process of that other person?
You can fix how you react, for sure. Now, sometimes, as you and I know, it can be from a past life or an interlife. It can be from your karma that you brought in with you. But that doesn't mean you can't change it. You can't change the karma because we're all in control. We live in a land, a planet of free will. So how we choose to live and how we choose to interact with ourselves and others is totally our responsibility. So, yes, if we meet someone who rubs us the wrong way, we can, first of all, find out why they rub us the wrong way. Are they affecting our values? Are they just irritating us the way they move or walk? Sometimes that can happen.
Sure.
What is it? Just ask ourselves, because that relationship with ourselves is the most important thing.
Can you generally get to anybody in terms of breaking down whatever barrier they might put up?
We can get to, I would say, 95% of people because we all have something in common, even if though we don't think so. There's a chapter in my book called You and the Unloved Ones, because we all have people that we don't particularly love or like in our life, whether they be relations or whether they be colleagues at work. But there is a way of bridging that gap, even from your higher self, even spiritually, but certainly on a day-to-day basis, because we all have something in common. And it's up to us to make it work, not up to the other person. If we change, the energy changes. Now, is it simple? Not always. But is it possible? Absolutely.
Give us an example at how you would use the Third Circle Protocol and make it work for you.
Sure. I have a client, or had a client, who was having trouble with their teenage daughter. And the whole point about being teenage is that they are fighting for their independence. That's their job. I remember when my daughter was a kid. She was 14 or something.
It's the worst age for a parent, by the way.
Oh, listen. And I said to her at one point, you know, lovely, it's my job to push you. And she looked at me, she said, yes, and it's my job to push back. And I just laughed.
Smart kid.
She was so right. It was right on. But what this is about acknowledging both sets of values, both sets of priorities, and both sets of, this is what I absolutely need, these four or five things I need in every relationship, particularly with you, my daughter or son, and you, my mother. And what do I want, and what am I prepared to give? So those three things allow the teenager to have their power as well. Now, interestingly enough, when I work with both of them, it's usually the parent that's a little difficult. They're frightened to give up their power. They're frightened to give up the you must, you should, and move into an equal relationship of respect. Because if the first thing you need in your relationship is respect, or to be heard, or kindness, then that's how you will give, that's what you will give to the relationship. And let's see what the teenager brings. Quite often the teenager brings things like to be heard, kindness, respect, the same things. They want the same things. It's just that they don't know how to manifest them. This protocol teaches them how to manifest them. And with a teenager, we revisit the contract every 3 months. With adults, most of the time, it's every 6 to 12 months.
I know as a parent, Georgine, there's that high wire line that you have to draw as a parent.
No question.
Between letting the child do what they think they're going to do and not letting them hurt themselves, whether it's excessive drinking or drugs or things that they could get killed.
Right.
You have to balance that. And the kid doesn't really understand it, but as parents, we go through that, and it's not easy.
It's not easy, but they do understand it if they're asked to write their own contract. So if respect is in their contract, one of the questions we ask is, do you respect yourself?
To the kid.
Are you kind to yourself? Because if they do respect themselves and are kind to themselves, they won't drink until they throw up. It gives them a whole different picture on how to behave, not only with a parent, but with each other and with themselves. And I've had clients and have clients in the clinic who are teenage and parents, and it works. And I don't know who's more surprised, the parent or the teenager.
I just heard this weekend here in St. Louis, where I am right now, that somebody that we all know in our group, not necessarily close to the person, but we know him, that his 17-year-old son committed suicide this week.
Oh, there's nothing worse.
What would possess a 17-year-old youngster, teenager, to kill themselves?
Well, first of all, let's remember they don't have a frontal cortex developed yet. So that means that they don't have cause and effect awareness. They just feel it's hopeless. Nobody's listening to them, including themselves, their friends, that maybe they're an outcast. Who knows? We don't know the reasons. But they just don't know a way out. And they don't think beyond the immediate, a bit like an addict. They don't think beyond the immediate, which is why, you know, teenagers do stupid things anyway.
Some youngsters kill themselves because they're bullied over social networking.
Totally, yes. They're bullied over social networking or even at school, or they're ignored, or they feel useless, helpless, unwanted, unloved. There's nowhere to go.
As a parent, can you see that before something happens?
Depends on how close you are to your kids. Now, that's easy for me to say. Mine are grown up. But when they're teenagers, they do shut down. But there's a way of finding out. If you bring them into family meetings on a regular basis, based on this third circle, if you bring them into family events, you'll notice. And if you go to school events, you'll notice how they're treated at school.
Yeah, I've got three children, and two of the girls gave us the worst time as teenagers.
Yeah.
I mean, just the worst time as teenagers. And we did everything we thought was right. And then all of a sudden, Georgina, they hit a certain age, and they become they blossom, and they become wonderful young adults. And, you know, now they have their own kids, and they're going through some of the same rigors that we went through.
And you say, ha, ha, ha.
But, you do in a certain way. But what makes them go from that stage as a teenager where we're pulling our hair out, and then all of a sudden they blossom into perfect young people again?
Because you brought them up in an appropriate way when they were younger and instilled values into them. They chose to ignore those values as they were pushing back to regain their power. And then when that frontal cortex developed and they understood cause and effect, they become human again. I often used to say to my daughter, I wish I could send you to a conference until you're 20.
So we did the right thing at least, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, because, I mean, they become not only wonderful children and young adults, but friends.
Yeah,
and,
that's a gift.
It really is.
That's truly a gift. But that's the unspoken contract. And at no point do we look at, when they start misbehaving, or behaving differently, I don't want to say misbehaving, behaving differently, at no point do we step back and say, okay, we've taken a snapshot of these kids when they were 6, 7, 8, and 9, and how they were sweet and believed everything we said, right? We were God. They believed everything we said. Now, suddenly, this is not true. So we're still living in the same snapshot that we have with them, but they've changed. So we're living in an old environment, and we need to have another look at that contract and rewrite it for what it is today, not what it was yesterday. That's where we fall down.
Now, as you look at this third circle protocol,
mm-hmm.
who would you say is the most appropriate to work this out with? A professional, a boss, a relationship, or everything?
First of all, yourself. Absolutely yourself. You know, I often get people in the clinic coming in saying, how come I always choose losers? You know, whether it be men or women or whatever. But how come I can't find a partner? How come I can't find a job that I can stay at? It's because they don't know themselves. So the first thing you have to do is to really understand yourself and know your value system. What's important to you? What 6 or 7 values do you make your character? Who are you? Then from there you go to your priorities. What's important to you over the next 6 to 12 months? And then what do you absolutely need, bottom line need, in every relationship you have, including with yourself? And if you say respect or to be heard, I will say to you, do you respect yourself? Do you listen to your inner self? I want to know that you live your values and your needs. And then what are you prepared to give to a relationship? What are you prepared to enrich that relationship with? Because it needs enriching, otherwise it's going to get smaller and fade away.
Why do some relationships sour so fast?
Because attention's not paid to that contract. Because we go into it with excitement of the newness. We're always excited by newness and difference. And we don't pay attention to nurturing. It's like buying flowers, buying cut flowers. They're beautiful when we get them. With a little nurturing, they last a little longer. But eventually they fade if they're ignored. We have to really nurture this contract. And I don't care whether it's an employee or an employer or your kids, your spouse, your dentist, your doctor. We need to respect the relationship itself. These are people that we need to honor and respect, but most of all ourselves.
Now, what do you do, though? How do you handle that? Obviously, you're not going to go to your doctor and say, hey, we need a contract between each other.
No, but if you go in with knowing what your values are, knowing that one of your values is respect, you will respect, A, his time or her time. You will not show up late.
Right.
You will pay the fees that you have. You know, interestingly enough, I have a chapter in the book on professionals, the people we pay. Excuse me. And they all basically said the same thing, whether they were personal trainers, dentists, doctors, lawyers. They all said, first of all, pay your fee. Secondly, show up on time. Respect yourself. So if you're coming to your doctor and you know you're going to have an examination, wear comfortable clothes. If you're going to a dentist, clean your teeth. You know, be respectful. It's amazing. They all said the same thing. And finally, they said, we are not your friend. You know, we are friendly, but we're not your friend. So this is what we need from the contract.
Well, and they don't want to be your friend.
They don't want to be your friend.
But that's on a professional basis.
That's on a professional basis. But people forget that because somebody's friendly. Your trainer's friendly. Your massage therapist is friendly. Even your dental assistant is friendly. They are not your friend. They don't necessarily want to know your whole life story. And if you're going to your lawyer, go prepared with all your paperwork. The same thing with your doctor. They're asking you to show respect, as you would show respect to yourself.
How often have you gone to dinner and you see people at a table with their cell phones on their desk, on the table, and some of them texting away, not even looking at each other? Mm. I mean, that's what's happening to society these days.
Disrespect. Disrespect.
Yeah.
The person that isn't with me is more important than you are.
So true.
It's also unkind. It's diminishing the person opposite you.
It's embarrassing.
And particularly with children at the table. I mean, I find it so appalling, and I don't want to sound like a stuffy old woman, but I really do. I mean, why have them at your table if you're not going to pay attention and listen and talk and create relationship?
You're talking about children?
Children and adults.
Yeah. I mean, nothing wrong with having children at your table.
Nothing.
You're saying pay attention to them.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. What are they doing with tablets or phones? I do have a friend who says that when they take their children to a restaurant, and by the way, they travel with them all over the world, they ask their child to take a book with them because they either join in the conversation or they read a book in between courses. But they won't let them use the phone or a tablet or anything like that.
Which is smart.
Yeah.
Which is very, very smart.
So the child has to choose a book to take with them, or they choose to join in the conversation. Yeah.
I'm going to have you go through some of the aspects of the book, The Third Circle
Sure.
Protocol,
mm-hmm.
In terms of, are there levels or stages that people need to recognize in any kind of situation? And how do you begin?
You begin by starting with yourself. You begin by recognizing that there's you and I and the relationship. So it's me, myself, and the relationship. The relationship is the third circle. And it's a separate entity that needs to be fed and nurtured and recognized. And it's based on, first of all, our value system. Our value system is our character, really. How we live, how we interact with others is our character. Because we are nothing without others. Without relationships everywhere, we don't exist. You know, we are a reflection of relationships, if you like. So we start off with the whole idea that what is the right way or the most appropriate way to keep this relationship healthy with myself? What do I need to do every day to improve the relationship? What actions do I need to enrich the relationship for the long term? Is there something I need to do right away to correct anything that's wrong with it? And what do I want from the relationship? So what do you need, what do you want, and what are you prepared to give? And when I work with most people in the clinic, they don't understand that they have to give something to keep this relationship nurtured.
Georgina, hold on. We're going to hit this break, but we're going to come right back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about your work, The Third Circle Protocol. It's pretty fascinating, by the way, and how to adjust yourself to meet other people. We'll be back. We will be back with Georgina Cannon in just a moment as we talk about her work, The Third Circle Protocol. Next hour, of course, we'll take your phone calls, maybe your stories, too, about how you may have used a situation like this in your own life. I'd love to hear that story, too. This is a little after Christmas story. Of course, you know, today is kind of like the official day of Christmas for companies. Post office was closed. The Banks are closed. A lot of companies were closed. So we're going to just sit back and have some fun with you and take your calls next hour as well. Georgina Cannon, our special guest. And welcome back to Coast, Georgina Cannon with us. Georgina, when you analyze yourself first, as you recommended, are we at fault for anything? I mean, is there such a thing that, you know, it's your fault, not their fault?
Well, it's not a question of fault. It's a question of making life more harmonious. If you really know who you are and are comfortable in your skin, the good, the bad, the ugly, then nothing can really shake you. And you also, when you really understand yourself, you also understand others so much more. I know it sounds a little trite, but it does work. If you really, really know the parts of you that are not your greatest, you know,
your strengths and your weaknesses.
Your weaknesses, but also sometimes we can be sharp, we can be short, we can be unkind, we can be cold. But once you understand that about yourself and accept that you're human, then you allow others to be human. You know, we really stop judging because we realize that we're everything. Everybody is everything. And it's the pieces we choose to use every day in who we are and how we are that make us the person we are. So if you wake up feeling grumpy and you act that way all the time, then people will assume that you're grumpy and you're putting up a barrier between yourself and the other people. So we get to choose, and if you understand your values and live your values, then you're true to yourself, and you become true as a human being, and other people recognize it. They feel drawn to you energetically. And I say this to single people who come in and want to meet someone, and I literally say to them, until you know yourself, really, who you are and how you are, then how is anybody going to find you, the real you? And when you really understand yourself, then other people will be drawn towards you, recognizing you for who you are, not for who you pretend to be.
Do you use these abilities, these traits, these techniques for everybody you meet?
Yes, yes. Every client that comes in the clinic, I do it automatically. They don't even realize it's going on. Can I tell you how it started?
Yes, I'd love to hear that.
Okay. About 8 years ago, a young man came into the clinic, and he came in for anger management. And while
and when you say clinic, you're talking about your
my hypnosis
clinic.
Okay. Yes. He came in. He wanted to learn to manage his anger. He had recently inherited his parents' business, an electrical manufacturing company. And along with that business came the bookkeeper, who'd been there since the beginning. And she'd known him since he was 4 years old. And so she still treated him
like he was 4 years old.
That's right. So every time he called a staff meeting, she'd sort of pat him on the arm and say, "It's okay, Johnny, dear. You know, we're fine the way we are." And he'd explode.
Mm-hmm.
And the following, and then he'd apologize. And the following day, she'd bring him cookies to say she was sorry. And he literally sat in his chair opposite me and said, "I don't want her damn cookies." And I said, "Well, right now you're behaving like you're 4 years old." So what's happened is I realized she'd taken a snapshot of him, and he'd taken a snapshot of her. So we started with him bringing himself up to date. What were his values in all relationships? What did he believe in himself? How could we make that relationship work? And that's how it started. And since then, it's grown to people with aging parents, to people with in-laws, difficult in-laws, to people dating, brand new dating, with friends. You know, sometimes we have friends for a long time and they sort of drift away and we regret it. How do we reconnect with a boss that's difficult? And it really works. The protocol, once you understand it and you use it, it works.
Do you have to want to make it work?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
So if you fight it, it's not going to happen, is it?
No, nothing's going to happen if you don't want anything, you know. You have to really want it to work, and you have to be honest with yourself. If your values are kindness and generosity, or your values are an open mind, then why would you go into a relationship with a closed mind? Why would you go to work all tensed up and say, "My boss is such a pill that I know I'm going to have a terrible day today"? That's not going in living your values.
Now, we are human, and we are subject to the frailties of life, the ups and downs, tragedies occur.
Yes.
Some things happen. You're in a bad mood for a day.
Yes.
Sometimes you can't overcome it. What do you do about that?
Well, sometimes you can't, but you know you're not. That's the difference. It's an awareness.
Right.
You know you're not living it. You know you're not living your values. So you can say, and at that point, you can say to your kid or your partner or even your colleague, you know, I'm feeling like heck today. So please forgive me if I'm a little short. You know, once you recognize it in yourself, there is there's an allowance. And therefore, you allow others. So if you go into a store and the person behind the counter is a little bit short with you or a little bit rude, you don't immediately storm out and say, how dare they, who do they think they are? You come out saying, wonder what happened to them. Yeah, because they're not obviously not being themselves.
I've got a little pet peeve, and I'm working at it, and I think I've got it under control, but and it may sound silly to you, but when I'm in a line, whatever the line might be, let's say it's a bank line or a post office line, I get upset when the person who's at the counter or the bank teller is done with their business, but they still stand there and keep talking and talking and talking as if the people behind them in line don't mean anything.
Right.
That gets me. Now, is that something I should fix?
Because
I mean, I don't go crazy. I don't scream. I don't.
No, but your stomach churns or you get tight.
I get aggravated.
You get aggravated. So who's that benefiting?
Nobody.
Nobody. And it's calming your body because it's raising the anger hormones and
or your blood pressure.
Blood
who knows?
Pressure. That's right. No.
Now, but here's the other question. Why did they do that? Why don't they just move out of the line, let the other person come up, and be done?
Well, who knows why they're doing it? They may well know each other. They may well be saying, and how is your husband, Johnny? I haven't seen him for a while at work. Is he okay? Who knows? We don't know.
Can't they be doing that, though, when the person's doing whatever they're doing? So you're taking advantage of that time while you're there? My point is once they're done, get out of there.
Well, that may be something you could say to the person when you reach the counter.
No, see, but I don't say that. I don't. Because to me, then it's rude. You know, I've seen people go up to people who are in line like that saying, excuse me, are you done? I don't do that. I don't do that to the teller. I don't do that to the person in line. I just sit there and go, come on.
Yourself.
Yeah.
So you're not kind to yourself. You may be kind to the person behind the counter, but you're not kind to yourself.
But is that something you would fix on somebody?
I wouldn't fix. I would show them how to live their values.
I mean, if that's my only pet peeve, that's not bad, huh?
That's not bad at all, as long as you don't take it on the road. You know, it's interesting, when you go on the road and you're driving behind someone.
Road rage. We got to talk about that.
Yeah. If you're driving behind someone who's driving the speed limit and you're in a rush because you're late, and you start honking your horn and
that's bad.
Weaving in and out.
Yep.
You have to remember, first of all, it's not their fault you're late. It's just not.
If it's an emergency, I get that.
It's a different thing.
Yeah, if something's wrong, if you're on your way to the hospital or you've got to do something like that, that's different.
Right. That's a different thing. Yeah, it's a different thing.
I remember many, many months ago, when I'm based in L.A., after the show, I had to take my producer to the hospital, and he was in excruciating pain. And so we got him in the car, and off I went to the closest hospital from our studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at a red light, Georgina, that I swear to God stayed red. It felt like 16 weeks.
Wow.
I mean, it wouldn't change. So I mean, I'm looking at my producer who's grimacing in pain.
Yeah.
I went through the red light. I mean, there was nobody there. There was no chance of an accident. It was 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
I went through the red light. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a police officer has got his lights behind me, and he's doing that. I'm not stopping. The producer's hurt. And finally, with his megaphone, he goes, pull over now. And I'm saying, God, I better, you know, never know what's going to happen. So I roll the window down, and as he was getting out of his car, I said, I've got to get to the hospital. My producer is in excruciating pain. He said, follow me. And so I got behind him, and he took us through every red light with his lights on and became part of the whole program to get the producer to the hospital. Whatever happened clicked that night, and it worked.
Right. Kindness.
Kindness.
Kindness, yeah. I mean, you know, it pays off every time. I really believe that. I really believe that kindness pays off.
But you were talking about road rage. It's at an epidemic stage right now. Last week alone, two little kids, one was killed, one was wounded from road ragers who either walked up and shot them or, you know, shot through, you know, of a car while driving. I mean, that's unacceptable to me.
Totally unacceptable. And where does that anger come from? Why aren't they working with someone to help release that anger? Why take it out?
Now, how do you reach someone like that, the road rager? Now, here's my definition, by the way, of road raging.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody does something bad or stupid on the road. Maybe they're not great drivers. Maybe they accidentally cut somebody off or something, and some of it, most of it, unintentional. But they just do. You know, they're just not paying attention. The road rager is someone who's having a bad day. That's my definition. What do you think of that?
I think they're a person who feels entitled. Instead of so they're obviously not aware of themselves or their own values, because if they were aware of their own values, they would allow other people to make a mistake. They wouldn't be so judgmental and so harsh on the other person. If that other person was attacking them and kept sideswiping them or kept interrupting while they
on purpose,
that'd be different. But if it's a mistake, then you allow people to make a mistake. We all do.
Yeah, you just maybe put your hands up in the air or something.
Yeah. Now, the only time these values change, and I talk about it in the book differently, is when you're dealing with your aging parents.
Explain that.
First of all, when we're dealing with aging parents and plans have to be made for their future, we have to remember we're working with their value system, not our own. So if their value system is different from yours, such as their value system says we don't wash our dirty laundry in public, we keep ourselves to ourselves, then you don't, without making sure they're okay with it, go and hire in outside help. They will feel ashamed and embarrassed that people can see them in a way that is not right for them. So, and the other thing about aging parents is if you're the person or the family that lives close to them and you're seeing them every day and you're taking care of them every day, then you know their ups and downs. Don't let another member of the family, even if it's the eldest son or the eldest daughter who lives on the other side of the country, fly in two or three times a year and give directions on what to do. You can't be what I call a seagull manager. You have to allow the people that are there on a day-to-day basis to make the day-to-day value decisions about your aging parents, because they're feeling pretty bad that they can't make their own decisions anymore, but we have to honor their values.
And you know the worst thing for that, for an aging parent, Georgine, is when you have to take their car keys away. Because for them, it's like it's over.
It's over, yeah. Freedom, gone.
Yeah. It's over. And that's one of the hardest things you have to do.
Yeah, it is. It is. If you live in a city, you can do what I did, which was to get a cab company account so that they, and I just gave them the book so they could come and go as they chose. So they didn't have to ask me to take them anywhere.
How do you know when the third circle protocol is working?
When people start behaving differently around you and around everyone else, when they become kinder, more allowing, more understanding, wider in their perception. So, for instance, if they've got difficult in-laws, they obviously, and there's a whole protocol in the book about that. If you've got difficult in-laws, stop complaining and whining about them. Live your values around them and find out what their value system is, and have a relationship. You've taken from them their daughter or their son, one of the most precious things they have.
Sure.
And you now are the most important person to that son or daughter.
But are you saying you can affect somebody else
Absolutely.
By the way you handle it?
Absolutely. We do it with children all the time. We do it unknowingly. Now I'm suggesting that we do it knowingly. I'm suggesting that we become aware of our behavior and our interactions rather than just doing it automatically.
Are there stages or steps that should be done chronologically?
Yes, yes. The steps are, first of all, know your values. Know exactly what your value system is.
As an individual.
As an individual. What is the most important thing for you? And then what are your priorities? And then what do you absolutely need to have in every relationship? What bottom line? You know, for me, it's to be heard in my relationships. It's to be respected. Laughter is a big one for me in relationships. Humor. And kindness is right at the top. So, and what those are needs. And then what do you want? You know, well, what do I want? I want people in my life who are fit, who are healthy, who are amusing, who are easy to get along with, preferably. And what am I prepared to give?
Is it okay not to associate with people who do not have those values you just mentioned?
It depends. If you're in a career or you've got a job,
you may be stuck with them.
You're stuck with them. Then you live your values, you live your priorities, and eventually they will change because they will see through you that you have a fuller life, you have a better relationship with other colleagues. You may not have it with them, but...
You might succeed better.
No question. None.
When,
It's like oiling the wheels. It's really quite profound how it works, particularly, and the most profound change is with teenagers.
Have you come across a situation where they just don't get it? People in general.
I work with couples, and I do work with couples sometimes, where at the end of the process, after 3 or 4 months, they realize they're just not meant for each other.
Never were.
Never were. And they may not be married, or they may be married, but they do now know what they need in a relationship and what they're prepared to give. So the next one they go on to has more chance of success. So they don't bounce from one person to another wondering what went wrong.
Is this emotional for some people? Have you seen them break down in front of you?
Oh, totally. They say things like, I had no idea. I had no idea I was doing this. I had no idea I needed this. I had no idea that I was not really nurturing him or her. I just thought by being there was enough. And the difference this makes, particularly with couples, if one of them travels, is that if they have any temptation to cheat, they're not cheating against their partner. They're cheating against the relationship.
The relationship.
Separates it out.
And maybe themselves.
And themselves. So suddenly they realize that what they're responsible for, which is that part of the relationship, they're shrinking it. Their partner may not even know, but they know. And it makes a huge difference in behavior.
Georgina, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next. Questions, and if you want to share a personal story where maybe you used one of these techniques, share that story with us. I'd love to hear it.